Listening Library presents Count Karlstein by Philip Pullman, read for you by Joe Thurley, with a full cast.
Count Karlstein by Philip Pullman. Part 1. Hildy. Peter crouched over the fire, stirring the embers so that the sparks swarmed up like imps on the rocky walls of hell. Behind him, his shadow shook and flared across the wall and half the ceiling of our little bedroom, and the cracks between the floorboards shone like golden rivers in the darkness. "Listen," he said. "Zamiel." And with a delicious shiver, I pulled my eiderdown over me and lay on the rug, with my face pressed to the floor to hear the voices from the parlour below. We lived in the tavern, in Karlstein Village, with our ma, who was the landlady. A quiet enough place, though there was usually a stranger or two passing through, and the company in the tavern parlour was as good as any in the mountains, especially on a winter's night, when their pipes were going and their glasses full, and there was a good story to be told. Peter and I each had our favourites. Stories of hunting for him, and tales of terror for me. The best of all were those about Zamiel, the Prince of the Mountains, the demon huntsman. There was usually a bargain in the tale, and a chase, and bloody revenge, and a frenzied victim running in terror through the snow, pursued by the wild hunt. Great hounds with slavering jaws and luminous eyes. Black horses ridden by grinning skeletons. And, at the head of it all, the demon himself, swathed in impenetrable darkness, with eyes of raging fire. Even our ma, we'd see through the cracks in the floorboards, would pause in her work and lean her plump elbows on the counter and stare with wide eyes as the latest tale unfolded. But none of the customers below ever came so close to Zamiel as Peter and I did, and I came closest of all. I was in the very room when he came for his victim, and I'll never forget what I saw if I lived till the year 1900. It all began on a grey afternoon in October. The year was 1816, and I'd been working at Castle Karlstein for nearly a year. My name is Hildy, by the way. There had been a heavy fall of snow. I was sitting at the parlour window with a bundle of mending in my lap, and Miss Lucy and Miss Charlotte behind me were roasting chestnuts in the fire. I was looking out at the fading light and thinking of drawing the curtains to shut out the chill, when I saw a coach lumbering up the narrow road. I gazed at it in surprise, because we'd had no visitors since March. And then, as the coach turned the corner into the castle courtyard, the wheels slipped on the icy road, and the coach slewed round towards the precipice. The horses whinnied with fear, and the driver nearly fell off the box as the brakes screeched and failed to grip. The coach banged against the stone gateway and came away lighter by a great strip of paint. I jumped and cried out. And then, at the last moment, the wheels gripped and the coach rolled through into the courtyard. The girls ran up beside me and watched as the coachman got down and leaned shivering against the large back wheel and mopped his forehead before opening the door of the coach. Out there stepped, cool as you please, a skinny old gentleman in black, who looked at the coachman as if to say, "Nerves, I advise you to have him cut out, my man, and braided into a whip, the better to guide these shambling nags." Dusted off the flakes of snow that had had the impertinence to settle on his bony old shoulders, and made his way across the white courtyard, where the darkness was already beginning to pile up in the corners, as if driven there by the wind. Johann the footman opened the castle door and let out a great quantity of light, which leapt inside again as soon as he shut it. The coachman began to unharness the horses, with many head shakings and gesturings to the groom, while the girls tried to guess who the visitor might be. They were English, not Swiss at all, though they picked up enough of our language in the time they'd been here to sound like natives. Lucy was 12 and Charlotte was 10, and I wasn't much older myself, but I counted myself more fortunate by far, because I had a mother still alive and a brother, and no grim uncle like Count Karlstein. They had no other relatives, and since their parents had both died in a shipwreck, they had no choice but Count Karlstein or an orphanage. And if they'd known what he'd be like, they'd have chosen the orphanage without a second's pause. They'd been here a year now, poor things. He'd been here for 9, nearly. Old Count Ludwig Karlstein, the previous count, had died without an heir, so the estate had passed to Count Heinrich Karlstein, a thin, dark man, much given to gnawing his nails, muttering to himself, and poring over works of German philosophy at midnight in his stone-walled tapestried study. Nothing so bad in those things, of course, but he had other defects, such as a temper you'd have had put down for its own sake if it had been a dog, a vile, sarcastic tongue, and, worst of all, a kind of bright-eyed delight in being cruel, whether it was to a horse, or a dog, or a servant, or a little niece from another country with nowhere else to go. But there it was. He was the master. And, meanwhile, Lucy had remembered who the visitor was.
"It's the lawyer, Charlotte, the old man from Geneva. He gave us that dark sweet wine and some cake while we waited for Uncle Heinrich."
"Meister Highfish?"
"That's right. Perhaps he's come to take us away again. Can he do that? Do you think he can do that, Hildy?"
"Hildy, go and find out. Go and listen, please."
"I can't do that. They'd throw me out for good, and then where would you be? Just wait and see. That's the best thing to do."
Lucy made a face, but she saw I was right. And as it happened, none of us had long to wait, because only a minute or so later, Frau Müller, the housekeeper, as surly as a goose, and with the same way of leaning at you with a long neck when she was cross, came bustling in.
"Miss Lucy and Miss Charlotte, you're to go and wash yourselves and brush your hair and come down to your Uncle Heinrich in 10 minutes. And you, Kelmer, put that sewing down and get along to the drawing room. Detweiler fell over in the courtyard and broke her ankle, stupid girl. So you'll have to be the parlourmaid for the time being."
They were hustled away, and I took a candle and hastened down to the drawing room. Poor little Susie Detweiler. Count Karlstein had made her cry 3 times yesterday, and now she breaks her ankle. My heart was thumping wildly as I went in case my clumsiness attracted Count Karlstein's attention. I feared he'd lash at me like a tiger. But when I opened the door, I saw him so deep in conversation with the skinny old stranger, and the skinny old stranger paying such close attention to him, that neither of them noticed me for a moment or two. I don't know what I should have done, but I stood in the shadows, too nervous to go forward, and listened to what they were saying.
"Damn it, Highfish. You're not sure? After 9 years, how much longer do you want? Would 100 years be sufficient? Would you be able to say then, 'Yes, Count Karlstein, we have finally established that there is no other claimant, for if there was, he must be dead by now,
Meister Highfish showed no sign that Count Karlstein's tone annoyed him. He was as calm as he'd been when he stepped out of the coach, having missed certain death by the thickness of a wheel rim.
"You asked me to make certain, Count Karlstein. Certainty without evidence in a case like this is worthless."
"Worthless? You're worthless, Highfish. If you can't do better than that, if evidence is all you want, can't you manufacture some, eh? Make it up?"
The lawyer stood up. That was all he did, but it stopped Count Karlstein's restless prowling and finger-gnawing and sideways kicks at the great log in the fire as effectively as if a gunshot had sounded. Meister Highfish had a presence that commanded your attention.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?